Mark My Words shares Mark Homer's contrarian views on investing, business, finance, economics, and all things money. Mark interviews the world's most successful business, finance, and money experts, as well as imparting his knowledge in a factual, direct, and no-nonsense manner. Welcome to Mark My Words. And here is your host, Mark Homer.
Hi, guys, and thank you for joining us today. It's me, Beth, your social media extraordinaire with you today. As you know, it is Progressive and Unlimited Success's 11th birthday today, and I am joined with Rob and Mark. We get to talk to them today about the top 11 business tips that you have learned over all the years while being at Progressive and Unlimited Success. So if we go into our first one, it's manage your emotions and master your life.
Yeah, so I think when we started in business, you don't realise what an emotional roller coaster it is, a bit like being in a relationship or having kids, being a parent. And I think you have this naive fantasy when you start a company that people work for you. No, they don't. People work for themselves. And it's very easy to take things personally, things that people write about you online, things that you maybe some of your staff do that, you know, maybe you didn't want them to do, things that the HMRC do that you don't want them to do, things that your business partner does that you don't want them to do. But you know, if you want to grow a business, you have to let go of control and you have to let people be them. And so over the years, working on our management of our emotions, i.e. we feel personal about something and how it affects us, but actually it's not about us. And if we can manage those emotions and still be professional and still care about people and not have a meltdown or not overreact, stay cool when the market's going like that, or you know, staff members come and go, or you've got a legal case, or you've got trolls, handling that very well and calmly is something I definitely couldn't do 12 years ago. And I, look, no one's perfect at it. I still, you know, we're all people, aren't we? But I think I've got better at it. And Mark and I have worked on it together in our partnership. And you know, you watch the American TV shows and watch people like they're pointing and shouting, and you know, you go and be competitive and bash your competition and you win and it's victory at all costs. Well, actually, it's not like that at all. If you want to, one thing being in it 11 years has taught me is that you need to make friends with as many people as you can. You need to treat people as well as you can because things come round.
Was it quite a quick lesson that you picked
up on? No, I was very slow at it. No, it took me many years. And a lot of therapy and a lot of personal development courses and a lot of Tony Robbins courses, hugging, high-fiving, kissing and clapping, and a lot of books and audio programs. But I think it's a vital part of business.
I'd say the same in a sort of in another way, because we do quite different things in the business. I think most of the time if I'm dealing, I don't know, with legal stuff or development stuff or you know, working on finance or whatever it is, it's probably more like that. Okay. Whereas Rob's side of the business is more sort of, you know, marketing or sales or, you know what I mean? It's a lot more variable.
Okay.
But I mean, you have to keep your cool when you're dealing with your refurb teams, don't you?
Constantly.
Yeah.
There we go.
You have to go into some hard meetings that you don't want to go in,
yeah,
and still be professional.
Every couple of weeks. Yeah, you have one of those. Yeah.
You have to talk to planning consultants really nicely, don't you?
You're nice to them.
Yeah.
Especially the officers.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the second one, most government regulation or tax proposals don't happen or aren't as bad as you think.
So this is back to the point which we made around when there's a big change in the economy, or you know, there's a change in regulations, or people are saying that something's going to change in a big way, that people often panic and sell properties or stop buying or change their strategy or whatever. Often, when you get a new set of politicians in, as happened with, you know, David Cameron, George Osborne, they introduced a raft of changes, such as putting the stamp duty up and saying that you couldn't offset all the mortgage interest against your rent if you own the property personally. And they introduced lots of other changes with housing benefit. Now, those are things that happened. Prior to that, I would say there were probably another 95 things which were talked about by commentators or perhaps MPs, perhaps ministers, and definitely the media in general.
Weren't they going to drop VAT and then never did?
That was, you know, that went up to 20%, didn't it? Yeah. Remember when it was 17.5%? Remember when it was 15%? You know, that didn't come back down again. I remember when the EU were going to regulate all buy-to-let mortgages. That went away.
You were going to be able to put resis in a SIP.
You were going to be able to put residential properties into a pension. That was actually quite far advanced, and the government said it was going to happen, and the pension industry spent hundreds of millions getting ready for it. Mm-hmm. And at the last minute, they pulled it. But sort of even before that, even before it gets to that stage, there is also always a whole load of talk around things that are going to happen. You know, Brexit's going to happen, all the Polish are going to go home. You know, there's going to be a lot less Bulgarians and Romanians and, you know, Latvians. They're not going to be here anymore. All the houses are going to be empty. Well, you know, that seems to have gone away now, doesn't it? Now their rights are going to be guaranteed and everyone's going to be allowed to stay. What a surprise. It was pretty obvious that was going to happen anyway. There are so many of those stories and ideas that have come about over the years that until it looks pretty serious, maybe there's a government consultation or there's a minister or the prime minister saying, this is what we're going to do, I don't really take it very seriously anymore, because you would spend your life getting ready for 95% of things that don't change, don't happen, recession that doesn't come, interest rates that don't come up, because of course interest rates have been going up for the last, well, since they came down, almost every year, and every time they predict, you know, make a prediction about them, when they're going to go up, they're usually wrong. I'm not saying they're not going to go up, because they will, but people have no idea when and by how much. You can't predict this stuff.
No.
So don't take too much notice of the stuff, which is a maybe.
Just take the media with a pinch of salt, maybe, till it actually is confirmed.
Yeah, and other people as well, because it's often other investors that are saying that stuff is guaranteed, and most of the time they're just wrong. And
everyone loves to make a prediction, don't they? Yeah. Everyone does.
People don't work for you, they work for themselves. You spoke about this a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I think that when you set up a business, you have this naive fantasy that, you know, people work for you because you pay them. Well, actually, they don't. They work for themselves because they want to achieve their own goals. They've got their own career aspirations. They obviously want to pay their mortgages and have holidays and have their lifestyle that they want. And I think maybe a few years ago, with having some great people in this team that taught me as much as I've taught them, I think if you can give people that work for you or with you, whether they're outsourced or insourced or partnerships or whatever, if you treat them as an equal and maybe as a partner more than a subordinate, and you try and find out their values and what's most important to them in their life and actually what they want to do. Obviously, you know, you were in a previous role with us, weren't you, Beth? And, you know, you wanted to move into a different role, and we were all excited about that, and we made that happen, which was a really great thing. I just think if you're more focused on caring about what other people around you want as much as is what you want, and help them meet those needs. And I also used to naively think, well, what motivates me will motivate others. And so what motivated me might have been money or status. Some people, you know, giving them letting them choose their own title would be worth like giving them a £5,000 pay rise. I remember one person who worked for us, we offered a really nice bonus, and actually she kind of turned her nose up, which was surprising to me. But actually, given her Friday afternoon off, because that was important to her, and I think she had children at the time, that was really valuable to her. So I think when you find out what people really want and where they want to go with their career, and see your role, it's almost like the servant leadership role of helping them meet their own goals and needs, they'll in turn help you meet your own goals and needs. Ultimately, to have control, you have to completely relinquish control. You know, and the more you try and force someone to do what you want them to do through fear or perfectionism, you just push them away. And you know, people are going to do what you want them to do if they feel compelled to do it themselves and they're getting their own needs met.
Fantastic. I think you guys are actually really good at doing your own advice as well, especially in Progressive. I think we all can agree with what you do for us, like the benefits you give us, the fact that I was able to move jobs when it wasn't quite right for me, you accommodated it more than happily. So
yeah, well, we do our best and we're not perfect, and sometimes it doesn't quite work out. Yeah. But I'm really proud of the fact there's Sue sitting there and there's plenty of other people who've moved roles over the years. And that makes me feel really good that the culture is right. You know, sometimes people's jobs do change. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what they want to do changes. But the fact that the feedback is that they still want to be here and part of this is great. And of course, your culture does change every few years and you go through your blips. Mm-hmm. But just always embracing that and trying to listen to people, I think is really important.
Most people misevaluate risk, take too big risks, or conversely scared when the risk is much lower than they think.
Yeah, so people misprice risk on a daily basis. Interest rate risk. Lots of people will go into big fixed rate products or...
If you love to travel like me and you understand the power in escaping the money for time exchange trap, but you just don't know how to do it, then building an Airbnb consultancy business could be exactly what you have been looking for. Right now in the UK, there is a completely untapped opportunity through helping struggling Airbnb hosts by turning around their underperforming properties and generating you huge commission payments in the process. We are going to teach you all of the tools and all of the techniques that we've learned over the last 5 years through building our very own multiple six-figure Airbnb business, arming you with everything that you need to swoop in and save the day. Minimal startup costs, zero risk, and almost unlimited potential. Sound good? Welcome to the Airbnb Consultant. Contact us through any of the channels included in the studio notes to get the conversation started.
You know, they'll take hedges for, you know, a lot of debt, and maybe that's a good idea if there's, you know, a huge amount of debt. But generally speaking, trackers are cheaper over the long run. Now, that doesn't help you if interest rates suddenly go up to 10% and you've got interest rate shock. But generally, a fixed rate is rarely longer than 5 years. So it's probably only going to help you out for maybe 2 or 3 years, depending on where you are in that 5 year period. And then you're going to be back to high rates anyway. Bit like insurance. Well, it is insurance. It's the same thing another way around. You've got to get buildings insurance, you've got to get car insurance. I generally think most other types of insurance I'm not supportive of.
I've insured this man. We've got key man insurance, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got life insurance. I mean, that was...
I've probably got a high risk of death.
No, I don't think actually, this is completely switched. We used to fly helicopters quite a lot. And I think there was sort of one morning I probably got up and thought, this is the point at which it's a good idea to
insure me.
Yeah, well, insure both of us so that, if something catastrophic happened, the business wouldn't suffer. So I think you probably insure against big risks like that. But there's all sorts of other types of risk abatement and insurance policies which I think are just a waste of money. And pet insurance, which
they never pay out for.
They never bloody pay. So
that operation doesn't fit within.
Yeah, or
there's a lot of criteria, isn't there?
Yeah,
behind it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, tax investigation insurance we pay for every year. I know we had an aspect inquiry over some capital allowances that went on a number of years, and a good sort of chunk of that, 20 grand of it, they just wouldn't pay. You know, there's all sorts of other types of insurance that you can get for tenants. There's all sorts of other sorts of insurance that you could get for, you know, travel and whatever else. Reference the tenants properly, get good ones, manage them properly. That is way better than getting insurance for when they go wrong. Get an animal which is genetically less likely to...
Get a DNA engineered animal.
Genetically less likely to get ill. Treat it well. You know, exercise it and make sure it doesn't eat a load of, I don't know, chocolate, which is poisonous to dogs and things like that. These sort of... I know you find this funny, but they're just sort of examples of...
That animal has bad genes.
I guess a lot of insurance products like that, they play on people's fears, though, don't they?
They do. That, and that people go into PC World. I see this all the time. And my mum will do it. And they'll go into PC World and they'll go and buy a toaster Okay, well, all right, maybe they don't sell those there. But I went in a couple of days ago and I went to buy one of these tablets, okay?
Yeah.
So Gemma wants to look at all the cameras by her bedside just in case she hears a noise, she wants to see them all there. So I've had enough of spending 400 quid on an Apple iPad. So they've got a Samsung tablet there for 130 quid, which I think's, you know, pretty good. Don't need the latest thing anymore. And the next thing that happens is someone scoots out and says, oh, do you want to take the accidental sort of, the accidental
wind damage insurance
warranty, you know, oh, how much is that? Oh, it'll only cost you 60 quid. So it's not like, right, so that's 50% of the cost of the product. So I take two of those policies out and I've just bought a new one.
Yeah.
You know, that's if the policy pays out. And there are so many examples of that where people buy on fear. They think to themselves, well, I'm buying this computer or this iPad or whatever, and I need to insure against it going wrong. Or, you know, a good one is the washing machines. Washing machines go wrong all the time. As soon as you buy one, though, they try and put you on this plan where it's, I don't know, 100 quid a year. Well, why not buy a £250 washing machine, put the £100 a year into another bank account, and then buy a new bloody washing machine in 3 years' time? It's going to be cheaper, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think these basic calculations, if people perform these basic calculations and then self-insured by, you know, if they need to manage their cash flow, i.e. they haven't got the money to pay for these unexpected problems, if they just created their own insurance pot, they'd save a lot of money. Self-insure, not take the insurance out, and maybe just pay that money into another bank account, and then if you got ill or sick or whatever, use that money then to cash flow your liabilities for the period, you know, until you get better.
So marketing is the single most important business function. First, then have a meaningful product or service that helps people.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are well trained in their field. And I know consultants, trainers, coaches, you know, experts in different fields who spent £30,000-£40,000 getting trained, gone through school, university, or a more sort of private sector way of getting their training. Let's use an example of a life coach. And then what's their biggest problem 4 years later? They haven't got any clients. And you cannot coach people if you don't have clients. The most important thing when you're a coach is having clients. And I think a lot of businesses, not all, because others probably too focused on marketing and don't have a good product, but a lot of businesses don't focus enough on getting people through the door. So if you imagine a shop, some people think, well, it's important to sell. Well, the selling only happens in the shop from the owner or the cashier of the shop. And of course, the stock's in the shop. But marketing is getting people in the shop. So, you know, most problems in business, okay, there could be a hole in the business, the finances might not be managed very well, but basically most problems in business would be solved if you doubled your turnover. You know, if you got better at marketing, generating business. And, you know, so many people are spending years and years and years trying to perfect their product, when in fact they could put a raw version one product out, do a launch, reduce the price in line so that you know you're saying, look, there's fair exchange here because this version 2 will be better, therefore I'm offering a bit cheaper. Go and sell some of your product like we've done on the Progressive Pass. Yeah. So we've launched that and it's great. It's 15 times better than our old one. But we know there'll be bugs. We know there'll be a few things we've got to sort out. There's more content we want to put in. But instead of waiting another 6 months, we did a launch. We had 1,300, I think, beta test users. So they're in there, they're now using it, telling us, oh, okay, well, there's nothing on flipping, or maybe the search function doesn't work quite as well. I love it, but there's a few tweaks. We tweak that, then we bring it back out to the market, and then we can increase the price. So, you know, you've got to sell some stuff quickly, which is marketing, and then constantly iterate your products and make them better and better and better.
Birds of a feather flock together. Good networks will well-connect to people and schemers and scammers.
When I'm looking at a new industry or a new strategy or something that I want to do, I'll generally look at the people who are doing it and sort of who's in that space. You know, if it's a, I don't know, a new, say, a commercial conversion strategy, or, you know, maybe I'm looking to work out how to increase the yield on our properties and want to sort of, you know, modify our strategy in that way, or maybe we're looking to go into Bitcoin or whatever it is, I'll generally work out who's doing it and work out, you know, I usually know them, and you know, if I think they're good and they know what they're doing, often that will be more of an encouragement to go into something. Mm-hmm. I remember at the end of the last recession, when a lot of the new build companies, you know, when they were selling all the off-plan properties, when they went bust. Lots of those people went into selling carbon credits or land banking, or maybe they were doing forestry. I saw three or four characters that I'd remember as, let's be honest, as being shysters in the previous market.
Don't hold back, Mark.
No. And they all fired off in this direction. I knew I didn't need to look very deeply to work out that these were likely to be scams and you know, weren't really going to generate profits for the people who were going to engage in them. They were just selling more rubbish. So I think that saves you a lot of time if you look at the individuals who are involved in a sector or a business to work out, A, if it's good, it's got longevity, because lots of people get involved in something just because through naivety, because they're not experienced. But if there are some good people doing it and they've got experience and they've stood the test of time, that'll encourage me into it. Mm-hmm. And if there are lots of sort of less experienced people doing it, or schemers and scammers, that'll really put me off, and it'll take me a lot longer to get involved in something.
Money does make you happy, Rob. Yeah. Learning how to make, manage, master and measure money is vital, and do good with it.
Yeah, I think there is nothing wrong with having a focus on money. You know, we're in one floor of our offices here, and our accounts department is over there, and there's there's about 10 people in that department. And if we didn't have a focus on managing money and controlling costs, then it would all go into a hole. So, you know, like some people say, oh, you've just got to do what you love and love what you do. Well, yeah, you've got to enjoy it, but you've also got to be focused on the money. You need to generate enough turnover, and you need to take all your costs up and have a 20% net margin left. So having a money focus is important. So making it is okay. It doesn't make you bad or evil. Your product, you know, you should want to sell it. You should charge a fair exchange price, which means you can make some margin. You might need to up your prices. It's good to target driving revenue up. And then, of course, managing it well, which is when you get it, not squandering it, not giving it away frivolously, not overspending, also not being too tight and hoardy with it. And then learning how it works, learning its function, embracing its function, and ultimately making more of it, and very closely measuring it with key performance indicators, with key result areas. You know, knowing we Mark and I study our management accounts each month, and actually I could study them more. I read them on the top line, but I know if I really dug into them, that, you know, like the things are hidden in plain sight. So a lot of people run businesses, but they just don't know where all the money goes. And sometimes when we get big, or if I get disconnected, I'm just sort of thinking, oh, I don't really know what's going on here, or, you know, I haven't looked at my KPIs for a while, and I'm not really sure where stuff is going. So, yeah, it's balancing, doing meaningful work, creating great products, changing the world, making a difference. This is all important, and this is all very popular now, isn't it? But let's not also forget the fact that you need to make profit, and good, sustainable profit, and it's okay, and you need to pay your mortgages and send your kids to the school and all that kind of stuff. So you want an equal focus.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I think you said it before, was it a quote of, it might have been you, Mark, actually, if you run your business like a hobby, it will pay you like one. Mm. So it's good to have the focus on your business.
Yeah, you have to run your business like a business.
That's what it is.
And sometimes you have to make clinical financial decisions. Yeah. And if you balance that with a nice culture where you care about people as well, that's probably a good balance.
Mm. No, definitely. Okay, people buy what they want, not what they need. Beware of shiny things that only give a short-term hit.
You see this all the time. Yeah. And I'm not saying I'm immune to this, but you know, Apple's a good example, isn't it? They make made a good product, for me, one of the biggest benefits was how intuitive, easy to use, and the products are, and also the fact that they didn't go wrong, because I don't, you know, I value my time, and I don't want to spend my life fixing a computer or a device and trying to learn how it works. I just sort of want to use it and spend my time elsewhere. But I think one of the biggest draws for Apple or in terms of the consumers that would purchase its products, with the look and the feel of its products. Steve Jobs went down a road of creating this sort of quite Scandinavian or Germanic product that feels great. You know, it's got aluminium or metallic casing, and you know, it's very clean, you know, in terms of the lines. They spent a hell of a lot on design, and they managed to turn it into something that people desired, and you know, would people, especially young people, go out and sort of show their phone off, and it's something that their peers may be impressed if they buy. So lots of people are buying those products because they want them rather than through necessity. And I think that's a very, very good example. You go and buy a, I don't know, Chinese Huawei, or you know, maybe even a Samsung phone. Less so Samsung, but they're a lot cheaper. They do, in some ways, more. Android is probably more advanced, but people buy what they want, not what they need.
Give a successful person £1,000, they could turn it into £1,000,000. Give a poor person £1,000, they'll turn it into an iPhone. And you know, it's amazing how they've got us to spend £500 and then £1,000 on a phone. When, do you remember like 20 years ago?
£1,200, yeah. I refused this year, you that did. Was it. I'm done.
Do you remember like 20 years ago, you'd get a really nice phone free on a contract for a year, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You actually get the phone free, and now people, so I think also when you're selling and when you're on the other side of it as a business, you do need to show people what they want, not just what they need. You know, sometimes sales is about creating, like this is what Steve Jobs was one of the best in the world at it, wasn't he? He was like, hey, you don't need this iPhone. I mean, the iWatch. No one needs that. It doesn't do anything different to the phone, except you've got it on your wrist and it's smaller. But he managed to convince people that they need it by highlighting their desires. So I think if you're looking to grow your business, you want to tune into and sell to people what it is that they want, as well as what it is that they need.
Serve, solve, care, improve, and involve.
Yeah, so I think that the model for starting and scaling your business is to first off find a problem that exists in the world, a common problem ideally, because then you've got more customers. Then to create a meaningful solution to that problem that's fast, easy, convenient for the end users. And that can be anything from a vaccine to a better milk bottle top. You know, when the birds used to peck at the milk bottle top, and because Tetra Pak have become the rousing family, one of the richest families in the world, and that's all from packaging. So you can, the post-it notes, a very great solution to a very common problem. It's only a small problem, but first off, we must care to find the problem. Then we must solve the problem. Then we must serve our clients in solving that problem and care about them enough to get their feedback and to listen to them and work with them to make that problem better and better and better. And then just keep evolving through the different marketplaces as they change, as technology changes, as human behavior changes, as our problems change. And ultimately, I think that's a good model for sustained business success.
A no is only a no today.
I think whenever you're selling or you're looking to buy buildings, you know, this is very pertinent for myself, you get the answer no to a price that you want to pay or a building, you know, that somebody may not want to sell many, many more times than you would get a yes. So, you know, if I'm trying to buy something, the building we last bought, I think I was sort of trying to get the agent to do a deal on that for about 14, 15 months before we actually bought it. And I just kept emailing and ringing and texting, saying when, and they kept saying no, they want to let that bit, they don't want to sell it. I kept saying, oh, I want to buy it. And then eventually, the vendor suddenly changed their mind and said, right, we want to sell it, but we want to sell the whole lot. And of course, because I'd kept peckering away and because I'd kept on trying to get hold of that building, a no had turned into a yes. Mm-hmm. So many times when you're speaking to prospects, you know, and they're looking at your services or your products, their initial response is no, I don't want that, or I can't afford that. But something will change in their life where they do need it. And if you're persistent and you stay around, then you're going to be ready and there, in the right place when they say yes. In addition, they may suddenly start liking a new product that you've got, or something about the products that you've already got changes, which turns the no into a yes. So I only see it as a short-term thing, the initial rejection. Keep staying on, be persistent, and then eventually it's likely to turn into a sale or a purchase, a transaction.
Number 11 then, our final one. Creativity, innovation, and ideas are vital. You can do this, keep practicing. I need to practice some more, and surround yourself with people and places that encourage it.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people who, they say that they're not creative or they're not very good at ideas. And I want to say that all business progression is about creativity, it's about ideas, innovation, it's about brainstorming, it's about looking at new ways to solve a problem. You know, Mark might not necessarily say, hey, I'm the most creative person, but getting in meeting with planners and looking at, you know, how many rooms he can fit into his big block, and I bet you he's very creative and I bet he's come up with a lot of solutions. And so what I guess I want to let entrepreneurs know is, even if you don't think you're creative, you are, because, you know, creativity can be, for example, Steve Jobs took a lot of research work that was done in Xerox and put it into his iPhone. So actually his creativity was copying and taking something and making it better, or taking it, like hip hop is a hybrid of different types of music. It's taking something and improving it, taking something that exists and making it better, or taking something out of a different market and putting it into yours. And all problems in business are solvable if you allow yourself time, space, you know, speak to people, go to design and art museums, read books, be around interesting people, have interesting conversations. Everything that you're struggling with in business right now is one good idea away from being completely solved. And I think you've just got to remember that and allow creativity within your team. And sometimes it's good to be bored. Sometimes it's good to have space where you're not just work. I have a lot of my best ideas when I'm bored, but I don't like let myself get bored very often, because I don't like it, because I don't like feeling bored. But if I'm wandering around, not much to do here, what am I doing? Scroll on social media, have a look at a couple of websites, blah, blah, catch a conversation, and all of a sudden that can all create an idea. Which if I was just work, diary, I wouldn't have space and time for that idea. Listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks, watching documentaries, having conversations about them, going out for dinner. Mark and I went out for dinner with Jonathan, didn't we? And, you know, having those discussions, sometimes allowing discussions and meetings to go a way you don't want them to go, so you can discover something new. The more and more I see businesses, I realise you're one idea away from the solution. You just don't know that you are, or you think that you can't create it.
Thank you very much for stopping by and spending
Pleasure.
Some time with me and both the communities as well. If you do want to hear more tips from Rob and Mark, they both do have their own podcast. All you have to search for is either The Disruptive Entrepreneur for Rob or Mark My Words for Mark. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.